That's Psalm 15, verse 1. Yahweh, who shall dwell in your sanctuary? Who shall live on your holy hill? Perhaps this was written before David took the hill of Zion from the Jebusites. And he talks about living in your sanctuary. Well, only the high priest could enter the sanctuary, the most holy place, briefly once a year. And maybe David has gone ahead, really, in his thinking to the spirit of the new covenant, when Paul explains in Hebrews that now the veil has been torn down through the death of Jesus, and therefore we can actually permanently abide in the most holy place. Maybe David had something of that in view. Or maybe he simply sees the sanctuary generally as the tabernacle which he intended to erect on Mount Zion. But then he goes on, verse 2, who shall dwell there? He who walks blamelessly and does what is right and speaks truth in his heart. And I want to think about this walking blamelessly, because the idea is that, yes, this is for the righteous, this is for the blameless. And you think of how God tells Abraham in Genesis 17, walk before me and be perfect or be blameless. And he who speaks the truth in his heart. Well, David's to be commended for understanding that it is the heart which is essential. It's our self-talk. Are we truthful in the things that we think about as we drive down a motorway, as we lay asleep on our bed, as we get ready to go to bed, as we rise up in the morning, as we just go through life? I used to think I was about the only guy who used to talk to myself. I used to think I was maybe crazy because I talked to myself, but I realized that's what people do. That's human beings. We talk to ourselves, and our self-talk is to be truthful. He who speaks the truth in his heart. And perhaps that is the litmus test of spirituality, because walking blamelessly and doing what is right is paralleled in verse 2 with speaking truth in the heart. But what does it mean then to be blameless? Does it mean to be morally spotless when God says to Abraham in Genesis 17, walk before me and be perfect? Well, that English translation, perfect, is really unfortunate, because that implies morally spotless, without sin. And nobody is without sin, whether it is theoretically possible to be without sin for, 5 minutes or whatever. No, I don't think that's a fruitful path to go down. The reality is that we all sin, and that's why the Lord Jesus died. For us, the just for the unjust. So what does this mean then, to be blameless? I mean, God says this about Job in Job chapter 1, right at the beginning. There was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job, and that man was blameless. Well, the Hebrew word tam, that's translated perfect, wrongly translated perfect, in the AV at least, the idea is really complete, and not necessarily morally spotless, morally sinless, because nobody is that. And how then can you be blameless? Well, he does define it here, speaking the truth in your heart. It is a devotion of the heart to God, not moral spotlessness, not never, as it were, doing a sin. And I think this is what God's looking for. He isn't unduly fazed by sin. What he looks for is a heart that is completely devoted to him. And this is why the record of the kings is so fascinating. Because you read God's overall judgment of a king, of the kings of Judah, some of them, and yes, they're given a pretty good write-up. This king didn't do what was wrong. He was devoted to me. He was like a good guy, and implication is he's going to be saved. He walked before me rightly, etc. And yet, then you read the account of the guy's life, and you see sin, failure, even dying in sin. At some point, you think of King Asa, for example, diseased in his feet and didn't turn to the Lord, but turned to physicians, at the end of his life, and yet he gets a pretty good overall write-up from God. So the idea is that God is not looking for moral perfection. Now, as soon as I say that, of course, we're all tempted to think, oh, great, well, I can sin then. God's like, okay with that. No, not at all. That is not at all what I wish you to understand from this. Not at all. It's not that we can sin and it's okay. God's so used to it sort of thing. No, you look at God's occasional very strict judgment of individuals for sin that we might have shrugged off a bit, like, for example, when Moses speaks inadvisedly with his lips and strikes the rock instead of speaking to it, and then he's not allowed to enter into the land. The old prophet at Bethel in 1 Kings 13 that, well, he's told not to eat and drink and not to return by the way by which he came, but another prophet says, oh, I've had a word from the Lord. You should come back to my place. There's something to eat. And he does it, and bang, he gets killed by a lion. Clearly a judicial judgment. The lion kills him and doesn't eat the carcass, just stands by him as if to say, yeah, well, God did this. So God is very strict about sin. Think of Uzzah touching the ark when the wagon wobbles and the ark nearly falls off and a guy puts his hand out to steady it and zap, he gets killed. No, God is serious. I mention those things because I don't want you to think by what I'm saying that I don't think that sin is serious or that God sort of shrugs it off. Not at all. But what I'm saying is that to walk before God blameless, as Abraham was asked to, and he certainly wasn't perfect at all, just think of his lying about his wife, you think of his wrong attitude, in my opinion, to Hagar, all sorts of things. He was not perfect in a moral sense, and yet God accepted him like that. You think of Job. At the end of the book of Job, God says he spoke what was right about me, and yet Job shakes his fist at God at some points during the dialogue. And Job even recognizes that himself. But God sees him as perfect. That is, as wholly devoted to him in his heart. And this, as I say, is what David is getting at here. He who walks blamelessly does what is right and speaks truth in his heart. It is the speaking truth in your heart that not just honesty in your heart, not just being realistic rather than exaggerating narratives over and over in your mind, that is also in view, but to speak the truth. Truth in the Old Testament, particularly in connection with the word mercy, mercy and truth, refers really to the covenant that we have with God. The person who, in their mind, is continually speaking to themselves about God's things. That is what he's looking for. That is to be blameless before him, because he's the only one, ultimately, who can put blame on anybody, and we shall be blameless before him. So he's looking for a heart that's devoted to him, not moral perfection. So don't be fazed by the mistranslation of this word as perfect and think, well, I can be perfect. You're not actually asked to be perfect. You actually won't be perfect. And you've already sinned, so you've already messed up. So, you know, the wage of sin is death, so that's it. Even if you're perfect from now on, it's not going to save you of itself. What God's looking for is a heart that is devoted to him. And, of course, there's going to be mess-ups and failures, as there was with David, there was with Abraham, there was with Job. And yet, I'm not saying that God shrugs it off, but he looks in the end on the heart that is devoted to him. And that is the point.